Or two. Two wounds.
Wanted to start off, you see our music team over here with these shirts on. You see me with this shirt. It says, love your neighbor, FBC Westbrook, no strings attached. I want to talk about the no strings attached part. You know, a lot of times churches are known for loving their neighbor with a specific goal in mind. Like, I love my neighbor so that I can lead them to Christ. I love my neighbor so that I can grow my church. I love my neighbor because of something I want to get. And so a lot of people, when they see you doing something that is full of grace, and they're like, what's your motive here? What do you want? But you see, when Jesus said, love your neighbor, I believe that he said that because as we love our neighbors, we are transformed and become more like Christ. It's not about what we get out of loving our neighbor. It's not loving them for a reason. Like you make a good relationship, you find out your neighbor is a plumber, and so you're like, I really want to get to know him because we got a plumbing situation we got to get taken care of, and that'd be great. I'm going to invite them over to dinner and then hit them up with the plumbing ask, right? No, it's not about that. So we've been talking about this series and using the book, The Art of Neighboring. Now, I have several left. I scoured the internet, found them in the used bookstores, and if you want one and are able, drop $5 in the offering plate, and that'll about cover it. But we're going along with this book, but obviously the book goes more in depth. Okay, I want to start off with a question. A question. I want to find out how rushed you were this morning getting to church. I want to find out how frantic it was to get to church in the park, how rushed it was. I'd like to even find out the top speed of the morning, the top speed. So some of you came on a highway. You know, you came on a highway. Others of you came through neighborhoods. Hopefully those of you who came through neighborhoods do not have the top speed. All right? But maybe you do. We'll find out. How many of you exceeded 25 miles per hour coming to the park? Yeah, Will. Let's say 35 miles an hour. Okay, drops. How about 45 miles an hour? Yep. Okay. How about 55? How about 65? How about 70? Still? How about 75? Turnpike. Yep, we got some turnpike folks. All right. Anybody topping 85? No 85s. Huh. You know, whenever I rent a car, they drive so much better than my car that I look down sometimes and I'm like, whoa, wow, I'm going 85 or I'm going 90. And I'm like, whoa, slow down. But I'm in Florida and Tampa and they're flying by me on both sides anyway. So I'm like, what is going on here? But the pace of getting to church, the pace, so many of us are rushed. I remember when we had our three little ones, and there was one time I was threatening my wife that I was going to leave, just going to leave them. I have to leave. I got to go. We got to be ready. That changed when we had our third child, because when you have two children, you play one-to-one defense. One of you gets one ready. The other one helps get the other one ready. Robin would get them both ready, but I would kind of watch the older one to make sure he wasn't falling apart before we went out the door. And so we would do that. But then we had the third one. When you have the third child, you have to switch to zone defense, right? It's zone defense now. Like, what is this one doing? Where's that one going? And so Robin, knowing my threats of I'm going to leave, I got to leave, we got to be on time, we got to go, she would get the baby ready and hand him to me and say, all right, go ahead, leave. No way I'm leaving with the baby. No way. I'm not doing it. Not doing it. And that, it was brilliant. But some of us have young families and we're in that position of going, hey, where we need the bottle. Where's the bottle? What do you mean, where's the bottle? We just had two bottles last night. Where did you get the bottle ready? I didn't get the bottle ready. Did you get the bottle ready? I didn't. Okay, diaper bag. Let's find that. Where is that? Why isn't the diaper bag in the place it's always supposed to be? Why is it not? And you're searching through the house and you're like, oh, yeah, a diaper bag got left in the car yesterday because we went to this thing and we forgot it in there. And you're like, ah. And it's funny because when I grew up, I knew on the way to church, because church was important. My family was like, we go to church, even before football practice when I was 9, 10 years old. We went to church and I would go to church in my Giants uniform with my shoulder pads and everything. You know, I would be like, okay, here I am at church. And oh yeah, I forgot to announce you guys. Anybody who wants to go to kids time, K through grade 5, they're over there in the gazebo. If you want to go play some games and stuff, it's over there. All right. So I just knew that with my family, my mom and dad would scream at each other the whole way to church. They would fight, 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 fight the whole entire time. And I'd be like sitting back there stressing. And then we would walk through the door of the church. And all of a sudden, my mom and dad, especially my mom, turned into this, I don't know how to describe it, but it was like she came through the front door and a transformation happened. And suddenly she was like, oh, Jeannie, did you have a good week? Oh, the Lord is good, isn't he? Oh. And I was like, it's just Jekyll and Hyde. What is going on? So they'd be these people before church, screaming at each other, and I think, oh, the Lord has performed a miraculous healing in this marriage. And then we'd get in the car to leave from church, and they would bicker again the whole time, my dad talking about how terrible the minister's sermon was, how many minutes he went over, all of that. My dad was the type of guy who set his alarm. Remember the alarms on your watches that would go, and he would set his alarm for 12. And as soon as 12 hit, you just let it go.
Beep, 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 beep.
I was like, who are these people? We get back in the car and I go, oh, they're the same people. Well, it wasn't because they're bad people. It was just we were rushed. We were so stressed. Now, if you'd like to follow along online, the bulletin for today is there. The annual report is still there, lovewestbrook.org. And I've titled this, Slow Down. You can't love at 40 miles per hour. Slow down. And so when we're rushing so fast and we say, everyone, we're so busy. How many of you guys are busy? We're all busy. That's the way it is. Everybody's busy all the time. Busy, busy, busy. And so we are people who have perfected the art of speed, the art of being busy. We've perfected it. We have all these things so that we can multitask. We can optimize our time. They even sell now this big board that you can put on your wall or on your fridge that is basically Google Calendar, but it's like a TV screen. You just put it up there. Everybody should buy one of these and we can keep track of each other's schedules, right? Because because after we have dance, but we got to stop. We got Little League, and then we got dance. But this weekend, well, on Thursday night, we have the chorus recital, and then we have this, and we're all just going crazy with busyness. I had to go. My ride's here. So here, I want to push back a little bit on how proud we feel when we're so busy. It just feels good to list all the things we're doing. How many of you are task list makers who love to cross it off? I'm one. Okay, now the real problem, how many of you are so bad that you will add something that is not on the task list that you've already done just so you can cross it off? I do that too. I'm like, I'm going to write that down so I can cross it off and I feel good. And so there's a little bit of pride when looking, saying, look at how much I've accomplished. I want to push back. Busyness is not a virtue. It's not a virtue. And hurry, chronic structural hurry, is one of the great enemies, I believe, the great enemies of the life that Jesus calls us into. And that's what I want to talk about today. When was the last time you had an unhurried conversation with someone you didn't plan to talk to? Someone there was no appointment, there was no schedule. I'm not talking at the mailbox, hey, how are you? Good. How are you? Good. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a conversation that's actually lasting and going on for a little bit to say, how many of us have had an unstructured, unhurried conversation with somebody that we didn't plan to? How many in the last 2 days you had one of those? How many in the last 5 days you've had one of those? More hands. How many in the last 10 days you've had one of those? Some of us, our hands still aren't going up, right? They still aren't going up. And we say, well, I'm an introvert. I don't do that. And the one I really get is I hear a lot of us say, it happens in our life group all the time. People will say, yeah, but I hate people. I hate people. And I'm like, you hate people. Yeah, I just don't want anything to do with them. I said, okay. So Jesus said, love your neighbor. Jesus said, love your enemy. Jesus showed us all these pictures of loving people. And you're saying, I hate people. Now, these things that Jesus said, they weren't suggestions. He didn't like, hey, you got time? Try loving some people. Hey, if it's convenient for you, love some people. Hey. You know, he gave us a story of the Good Samaritan that we looked at last week, right? And we saw all of the boundaries that were crossed in order to see that the man who crossed and helped the Samaritan was the neighbor. So here's the thing, the uncomfortable part. I don't have time is not a fact. It's a choice. I don't have time is not a fact. It's a choice. You know, you have the same amount of time as everyone who has ever lived. You have the same amount of time as everyone who has ever lived. I'm looking for my timer here. Let's see. I got my timer. 1 minute. I want everybody to stand up if you're able. And I don't want you to cheat. I want you to sit down when we hit 1 minute. When you think it's 1 minute, sit down. Don't count. No 1,000, 2,000s. All right, on your mark, get set, go. So far, nobody sat down. That's pretty good. Katie's gone to check her clock. She's going to get some water out of the back of my van. There's a bunch of water there if you need one.
I'll just get you one.
Me one? Thank you.
Mom, you got me one.
Oh. Whoa. No, wait. Things are going on. We're getting busy. I don't know. Sit down when you think we've reached your minute. Nope, we haven't. There goes some more.
Thank you.
1 minute, right there.
Oh, you're actually pretty close.
1 minute. Now, my point is that when we look at time, the same amount of time is going by for every single one of us. At all times, we have the same 24 hours in a day. And what we fill it with when we say, I don't have time, we're meaning I've decided to fill my time with other things. Try that instead of I don't have time. Nora calls Ella this week and says, Ella, do you want to get together? I have a writing project I'm doing, and I'd like to get your input on. And Ella, instead of saying, I don't have time, I want you to say, I've decided to fill my time with other things. Ouch! But that's the reality. That is the reality. It's not a condemnation. It's just an observation. It's an observation. This morning's text comes from Luke 10, 38 through 42. And this is going through the New Living Translation. It comes right after the Good Samaritan story. And it's a familiar story that I think is mishandled a whole lot of times. We're going to try to correct it. It starts in verse 38 of Luke 10. As Jesus and the disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. She came to Jesus and said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me. But the Lord said to her, my dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. But there's only one thing to be concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, I want us to be careful here. This passage is not about housework versus spiritual things. This passage is not a comment on gender roles. It's neither of those things. Mary, sitting at the feet of the rabbi, was absolutely radical at that time. Absolutely radical in the first century. And Jesus was defending her right to be there. In that time, women were not allowed to sit under the teaching of a rabbi. But Jesus never used those barriers. Jesus never put those barriers up to say, women do not count. That whole thing came from men leading churches. Big thumbs. We can talk about that more, because I'm sure some of you are like, what about when it says women are to remain quiet in the church? Well, look at the context of what was going on there. Women were all fighting. And so that was like, hey, shut up and let's worship the Lord. Okay? So Jesus was not talking about those things. Jesus was defending her right to be there. And it's not a blanket critique of hospitality either. It's not. What Jesus is actually talking about is a distraction against what really matters most. There are times we are distracted by things and we're missing what matters most. I'll tell you about one of mine in just a bit. See, Martha wasn't doing bad things. She was doing good things. She was being hospitable. She'd opened her home. She was preparing a meal. They're not sin. They're things the Bible praises. But she was so busy doing good things that she missed the best thing. So busy doing good things that she missed the best thing, the one thing in the moment that actually mattered most, being with Jesus, learning what Jesus was saying. Jesus was in her living room. Jesus, in her living room. And she was more worried about being in the kitchen and getting everything done. I can understand that. I can understand that. I'm sure some of you can. You're sitting there going, yeah, but who's going to do it if I don't do it? Maybe it's not going to happen right now. Maybe it's going to happen as a little bit later, and Jesus is going to say, okay, so let's get some dinner ready. Maybe that's what's going to happen. I don't know. I just know that he says Mary has picked the better thing, the better thing. So we do this constantly. We fill our lives with things that are genuinely good, work that matters, activities that are wholesome, obligations that are real, and we miss the thing right in front of us. Last week at the kids' carnival, share mine with you. Here we are, we're getting set up for the kids' carnival. And this man came over, and he was excited to see me. We had been having breakfast together before that, but hadn't seen each other in a few months. And he had been kind of exploring faith and asking faith questions. And he came up and he's smiling, and I was like, put out my hand, and he gives a big hug, and he starts talking about what's going on. And I'm thinking, I've got things to do. We have a bounce house. We have music to play. There's a grill over there. There's chalk that needs to be put on. I have things to do. Those are all good things. You know what I said to him? I said, so good to see you, but I got to go and check the music stream right now. And I left him, and I went over, started the children's toddler songs again. We hadn't even really started the carnival yet. After I did that, I felt just like what Martha must have felt like. I was like, I just did good things that needed to be done, but I missed the most important thing. This young father who had been talking to me about faith. And he was connecting with me, and he wanted to tell me about how things were going in his life. But I had to start the song about the cheesy fingers. What the heck? And after I'd done it and got the Bluetooth thing hooked back up and came back over, I was like, oh Lord, what am I doing? So many times we pick the good thing over the thing that matters most. It's a Martha problem. It's not evil. It's a good thing. The second point, you can't love people that you do not have time for. You can't love people you don't have time for. A direct question. Do you have any neighbors that live close to you, that you've lived next to for years maybe? And you don't really know. Maybe you don't even know their names. You don't know anything about them. We lived in Portland on the corner of Ray Street for about 10 or 11 years. I was too busy doing church stuff. I didn't know the neighbors behind me. I didn't know them beside me. I didn't know any of them. Because I was at the church Wednesday nights. I was at the church Friday nights. I was at the church Sunday nights. I had a meeting on Tuesday nights. I was so busy doing Jesus things, I didn't really have all that much time to love my neighbor. And there the mission field was, right there. See, I have this theory that I'm busy has become our default. That we're able to say, I'm busy, so I can't do what God would have me do. I'm too busy. And besides, I hate people. I look and say, wait, you got some wrestling with Jesus to do. Because he has a command that says, love your neighbor. Not with strings attached. Because as we love our neighbors, we become more like Christ. We become more like Christ. Arthur John Mark Comer has a phrase for it. He calls it hurry sickness in the book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And hurry sickness is when the pace of your life exceeds your, he says, your capacity to be human. What? Your pace of life exceeds your capacity to be human. What's the symptoms? He lists them. You feel vaguely behind all the time. You're irritated by slowness. Man, when I pull behind somebody who's going 35 and a 40, you would think the world is ending. With the amount that just boils up in me instantly. And I'm talking to them as though they could hear me. Like, dude, what are you doing? Come on, let's move it. You feel guilty when you're not productive. I feel like I'm wasting time. We're just hanging out together. I feel like I should be doing something. I can't afford to just sit here on my porch and chat. I've got stuff to do. It's hurry sickness. You can't fully enjoy a meal or a conversation because part of your brain's already somewhere else. Sound like anyone you know? Sound like you? I know it sounds like me. This study, as I put it back, you know, put it and started digging into it, has really been convicting for me. Because I'm like, I'm busy. So Jesus is saying, Martha, come back. All that other stuff, that's still going to be there. It's still going to be there. But this moment, this conversation, it only happens now. And you know what? He says it to you and me. He says the same thing to you and me. That obedience, that chance to we want the abundant life that he says he has for us. We want it. But you know the building blocks that to get it, that he says to do? We don't want to invest in those. Point three, hurry kills awareness. You know, there's a famous study where researchers asked, after giving a talk to the students in a seminary about the Good Samaritan. After giving this talk, they sent them one by one across the courtyard to give the talk to another class, another group of people. And so they were studying hard because they knew they had to present the same thing to these people over there, other students. And so they sent them across the courtyard. But they kind of had a setup, leaning against the wall was somebody who looked distressed, who looked very much like the beat up man on the road to Jericho. They put that person against the wall. Almost 2/3 of the seminary students walked right past him. Almost 2/3. You know what the other third, you know what the variable was to them stopping? The first 2/3 that missed, the 2/3 that missed, they told them, you only have 2 minutes to get there. They're waiting for you now. The last third, they told them, you don't start for 15, 20 minutes. So, you know, head on over. It was the hurriedness that made them miss the opportunity. And so maybe the rabbi, the priest, they had all those cultural barriers to touching the man. There was the blood thing. And if I touch the blood, then I'm ceremoniously unclean and can't do my job for a week. Maybe the assistant had to be on his way quickly. He was going, I'm sure they were hurrying. Hurry doesn't just make us less efficient. It makes us less human. It makes us narrow our attention so that we miss how the Lord is moving. You know, something I love about being outside in the park for church, I just love the vibe. I just love the quiet. I love the noise at the same time. I love the quiet. I love the sound of children laughing over there and playing on the swings. I love it when our little ones are rolling around or blowing bubbles, or even while we're out here sitting here listening to me. I love this non-structured structure. I just love it because for me, it feels like there's the absence of hurry. Do you want to know the hypocritical thing in that? I cut my sermon down because I was like, oh, we got communion and we have a meeting after. So I gotta go. I'm like, I'm preaching about not hurrying and going cut, 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 cut. See, the thing with taking that extra 2 minutes to talk to a neighbor, maybe somebody in line at the post office, the part of doing that, you're not trying to manufacture relationships. You're just opening the door to relationships maybe happening. And remember, it's not with strings attached. So my challenge for this week is try to be conscious of that. Try to be conscious of the unhurried conversation. Not that you want to get information to them, that you want to just hear and talk. Doesn't have to be deep. Martha, Martha, you're worried and upset about many things. You know why he says her name twice? I think it's because he wants her to stop and actually listen. How many times do you have to call your kid's name to get them to listen? Yeah, 10. We'll do it over and over. We're going to end this morning with communion together. And the picture of communion, yes, that Jesus chose this meal because it was a Passover meal and it signified passing over in the Hebrew culture with the blood on the doorways and all of that. But it also was something that we do regularly. We break bread together. And I don't see any part of hurry in it. I don't see Jesus giving instructions and saying, analyze this, take time and research this. He just says, on the night before he was crucified, Jesus sat at a table with his friends. And he didn't rush, he broke bread. He poured wine. He looked at the people around him and said, this is my body given for you. This is my blood poured out. This in remembrance of me. At that moment, he was fully present with everybody in the room, fully present, and said for us to do it, to remember him. Now, as our music team comes up, I just want us to be present before you go to that table. We do the table this way without passing it to everybody, so that you don't feel awkward if you're like, you know, I'm just brand new to exploring this faith. I don't know anything about it. And I just know that you'd like too much for me right now. That's fine. Okay. It's available to us to say, Lord Jesus, I'm remembering you. I'm remembering the sacrifice you made for me that made me whiter than snow, that forgives all of my sins. And I thank you for being my Lord. And that's when we take that communion with the bread, with the cup. Let's have a word of prayer. God, we confess that we're busy and distracted and hurried in ways we don't always choose and don't always recognize. Father, I just pray that you give us the gift of slowness. Make us aware. Help us be people who create margin, not for ourselves so much, but that others have room to land in our lives. Give us a Mary posture in a Martha world. And Lord Jesus, we thank you for your sacrifice. We thank you for the symbol of your body, for the symbol of your blood that was shed for us so that we could be with you forever in paradise. Thank you for washing us clean. In Jesus' name, amen.